There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Great to have you back with us here live on The Grill. We're live from the rooftop garden down here at Barasti. Beautiful evening. If you're in the vicinity, do come and join us. We're on air for another hour, and then we hand over to our colleagues at TalkSport to walk us through the Premier League action. We'll get to the Premier League action in just a few moments' time by way of the Premier League, because there is a live game ongoing at the moment. The Pride of Huddersfield is here alongside us, Sean O'Shea, keeping an eye on Manchester City against Everton.
Yeah, so we're into the last 13 minutes of this game now. City still in control after, you know, a little bit of a scare when Everton pulled it back to 2-1. But then Sterling's come on, got the third, 3-1. Back to being very comfortable, stroking the ball around. There's a little bit of handbags earlier, a couple of yellow cards dished out to Calvert-Lewin and to Fabian Delph. But other than that, nothing much to report at the minute. And I'm pretty sure City will just try and see this one out now.
At 7 o'clock this afternoon, we will have Crystal Palace against Leicester City. We'll have Watford against Cardiff City. Wolves are at home to Bournemouth. All of those games. Well, as soon as there are goals in those games, you'll hear them here, right here on Dubai Eye 103.8, courtesy of TalkSport. We're not doing the Huddersfield game, though.
Strange, Sean O'Shea. Yeah, I don't know why. There must be some sort of problem. There must have been camera delays been delivered to Huddersfield, because usually, obviously, they would be the number one slot for Dubai Eye.
confident of the 3 points for the town today against Newcastle?
Yes, I am confident. We beat them at home last year. They've got a few injury problems, like Jonjo Shelvey's missing, Yedlin suspended. Although we do have a recognised strike. That's very harsh with De Potcher. We don't score a lot of goals, so it might take an own goal from Newcastle for us to get 3 points. But I am confident, even though Moy, our best player, is out until the middle of February, I think we'll win today.
Good news is that if there are goals, and we expect goals, you'll be hearing about them first here on Dubai Eye 103.8. The feature game, though, is the one that sees Tottenham Hotspur taking on Burnley. And it's going to be called by our friend Russell Hargroves, who joins us live now from London, where the game is, around about 50 minutes away or so. Russell, thanks so much indeed for joining us live here on Dubai Eye 103.8, ahead of what promises to be another test for Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good afternoon to you guys. And Spurs, I tell you what, have run a few changes on the back of that super 1-1 draw against Barcelona that got them through to the Champions League last 16. Five new faces coming in for this one. Kieran Trippier, Ben Davies, Lucas Moura, who of course scored the goal later on off the bench, Eric Lamella, and Oliver Skipp, who's only 18. He was doing his A-levels earlier on this year. He's made one appearance in the Premier League in the London Derby against West Ham at the start of November. What an opportunity for him to start this game. And Burnley, a couple of changes. I think they're going to go three at the back, because Kevin Long is in with James Tarkowski and Ben Mee. So probably five at the back, effectively, with Bardsley and Taylor acting as the wing-backs as well. And there's no good Munson, who's picked up a hamstring injury. So in comes the pace of Aaron Lennon. So I can see Burnley being pretty defensive in this one. They've got the second worst defensive record in the Premier League. Spurs, free scoring. Harry Kane loves scoring in December in particular. 8 in his last 4 in the month. 19 in total in the month of December in the Premier League. And he starts up front with Lamella and with Dele Alli. So Spurs definitely favourites. And yeah, mixing it up a bit, but still with a strong team, we can safely say, on paper.
In terms of the opposition today, obviously, so there's injury concerns for Burnley as well, not just on the pitch, but also off it, because I understand that the manager, Sean Dyche, has been struggling with sciatica throughout the week. Do we know whether he's going to take his place in the dugout or not?
We understand that he will. We don't know for 100% sure, but his intention when he spoke to the media in the build-up to the game, ailing, as you say, with the back, was saying that he will take his place. And let's be honest, they need him. Burnley had that big win last time out against Brighton. Ended an 8-game winless run, 6 defeats in those 8 as well. And just 6 points from their last 10 away Premier League games. It's been a real struggle for them. We know that Burnley, I guess, kind of overstretched themselves, didn't they? It was a real shame. They got into Europe, which was great. It stretched the squad. They crashed out of Europe, lost the momentum in the league as well. And they've never truthfully recovered it. We've seen the odd decent result, but what, 3 wins in 16 games? It's such a far cry from the last campaign when Burnley were excellent, turned so many heads and really lit up the Premier League. It's been much tougher this time around, so I think Dyche desperately needed in that dugout, and I'd be very surprised if he's not there personally.
Russell, great win for Spurs midweek in the Champions League. A lot of talk in the off-season about the lack of signings for Tottenham. is this time of year when the games start to come really thick and fast, do they have the squad depth to deal with the games and potential injuries and suspensions? And any more news on the stadium? Are they finally going to get to the new stadium sometime early in 2019? Can you give us any sort of update?
Yeah, so a couple of things to go through there. Stadium-wise, of course, we now know that the Manchester United match in January is definitely going to be at Wembley and not at the new White Hart Lane. So are we looking maybe February? February at the very best, I think, for Spurs to be into it, but there's still no definite date, and that's a frustration. I think the fans quite enjoyed going to Wembley for a while, but they're now just sick and tired of it, and I think they just desperately want to have the opportunity to get to their new brand spanking new ground. Kind of just, what, 33,102, I think it was, for the game against Southampton in midweek a week or so ago. That was desperately, desperately disappointing. It's a grey, really bleak and miserable cold day today in London as well, so that ain't going to help the atmosphere. And then just in terms of Tottenham's squad, they're without quite a few players today. You think of Davinson Sanchez, Juan Foyth, Serge Aurier, all out at the back. And yeah, they are being stretched a little bit. They've got a decent nucleus. They've got, I'd say, 18, 20 very, very good players, but also these youngsters from the academy are coming through. We've seen what Harry Winks has done. He doesn't feature in this particular game from the start, but has been a good player in midfield. Young Ollie Skip, as we say, gets his chance. Foyth, when he's fit, has been a really good addition at the back for a youngster too. So they are bringing a few young players in, but I think you're right. They are short of, for me, two or three senior players, and I would be surprised in January if they don't address that. Now that they know for sure they're into the Champions League last 16, they've got that to look forward to, with, of course, the draw taking place on Monday, I guess Monday evening for you guys, late Monday morning for us. It's a big few months ahead. Loads of matches coming up in the Premier League. They've got the North London Derby as well in the Carabao Cup quarterfinals this coming Wednesday. And, of course, they've got the FA Cup starting first weekend of January as well. So, yeah, for me, get three or four faces in, add to that with the academy, and we'll see where we go.
Obviously, a busy schedule for Tottenham. I just want to get your thoughts on that victory midweek in the new camp as well. Glenn Hoddle came out and said it didn't help him in his recovery from heart surgery recently. But put into context the achievement from Spurs, given the fact that they started so badly.
I think that's the key thing, isn't it? They started that group in such disappointing fashion. And the draw itself on the night was impressive. It certainly wasn't a full-strength Barcelona team. I didn't think Spurs necessarily played brilliantly throughout the match, but hung in, got what they needed at the end and got the job done. It's that weighted momentum, isn't it? To have started so slowly, to have had two back-to-back wins and then that point as well, to have got 7 points from their final three games was absolutely critical, wasn't it? And there were so many questions being asked about the stadium, about the lack of squad depth, and also about the manager as well. Don't forget these rumours that won't go away, linking him to both Real Madrid and to Manchester United. And at one point, all three of those stories were bubbling up. Spurs were struggling in Europe, and everybody was saying, you know what, the wheels are about to come off. But the resilience on the night, the resilience in that group, and just the broader resilience that Tottenham have shown this season has been outstanding. As a result, third, it's their best start to a Premier League campaign. It's their best start to a top-flight season since the year 1960-61. They just keep on winning. 12 wins from 16 games this season in the league alone. Deep into Europe now. And obviously, it's that last day of the Carabao Cup as well, when they'll try and get a bit of revenge for their 4-2 defeat against Arsenal a couple of weeks ago that I've commentated on. And that's been the one galling thing of late, I think, was going down 4-2 at Emirates Stadium. Aside from that, the air of positivity has been pretty constant.
You are our matchday commentator for Tottenham Hotspur against Burnley. You'll hear all the goals in the other 7 o'clock kickoffs local time here in the UAE, that is. It's live here on Dubai I-103.8. I'm going to have to press you there, Russell, for a prediction for this one, please.
I am going to say that Harry Kane will get plenty more December goals today. Interesting that Burnley have gone 3 at the back. I don't think they'll get hammered. I am going to say 2-0 to Spurs, and Kane to get at least one of them.
You're calling it for us here in the region. Who's going to be alongside you?
I've got Paul Mortimer, the former Aston Villa and Charlton midfielder, top man. He's been away for a little while, so he's back into the hot seat and back alongside me for you guys. So looking forward to it.
We are very much looking forward to that. For now, Russ, I'll let you get on with the pre-match preparations for you. Thanks so much indeed for your time.
Always a pleasure, guys. Enjoy.
Looking forward to that one. That one's getting off on 7 p.m. local time here in the UAE. And stay tuned, because at 9:30 this evening, London Derby, you'll be able to hear Fulham against West Ham. Still got Sean O'Shea with us here, live from Barasti, watching the final moments of the Man City game. What's been happening?
Yeah, I mean, City just, like I said before, City just happy to see out the game. They've been keeping the ball very well. Haven't really tried to go forward and create many chances, just happy to stroke the ball about and let Everton chase the game. It's 3-1, it's very comfortable for them. You have to feel sorry for Everton, I think, because they haven't played poorly, but City have just been excellent today. They really have. Interestingly, Tottenham and Burnley, the last time Burnley won at away at Tottenham was in 1974.
What?
Yeah. It was the last time they were there. And do you know what was number one?
I really don't. I wasn't even on the planet at the time.
Kung Fu Fighting.
Oh, how did you know that?
I was watching Sky Sports earlier. Doing my pre-show research.
Yeah, so was I. It's not a stat that I throw around all the time. I just thought, I'll ask the lads that later on. But well done. Yeah, it was Kung Fu Fighting.
You should have taken that, Arch. We would have been in awe. We would have been in awe. Wow.
Should have said you're a massive fan of the song.
Yeah, I am old, but I was about three, I think, at that time.
13, come on.
Yeah, come on.
It was interesting because they played the song then, and then it was like interviewing Sean Dyche, and you could just hear Kung Fu Fighting in the background. It was very strange.
Are you listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Brest, where the game is always on? We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll turn attention to the world of rugby.
Go! This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
4001, if you're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. If only you could listen what goes on off air as well. There are limits. Right, have we got full time as yet, Sean O'Shea?
No, we're just into injury times. 4 minutes of overtime, but not, like I said, nothing really much happening. We've got 4 minutes this play out. Phil Foden's just about to come onto the pitch to get some minutes in his legs, but it's a very comfortable Manchester City 3, Everton 1.
Let's go to the world of rugby. Got some live games at the moment.
Yeah, two matches in the European Champions Cup have kicked off into the second half in Cardiff, and the local team, the Cardiff Blues, trail Saracens 16 points to 14. So 2-point lead there with 15 minutes gone in the second half. And up in Scotland, it's Glasgow Warriors taking on the French outfit Lyon, and it's looking comfortable for Glasgow at the moment. They lead 18 points to 3. Also, a couple of early kickoffs in the European Rugby Challenge Cup. Harlequins are taking on Benetton Treviso at the Stoop, and after 15 minutes, it's a try to Lewis Boyce. It means that Harlequins lead 7 points to 3 over the Italians. And Clermont Auvergne are taking on Newport Gwent Dragons, and Clermont firmly in control this match into the early moments of the second half. They lead the men from Wales 35 points to 17. So Quins and Clermont leading in the Challenge Cup, and we have Glasgow and Saracens leading in the Champions.
Connacht continued their pursuit of Sale in the European Challenge Cup last night. Sean O'Brien's double helped them to a bonus point 36-21 win at Perpignan. Dave Heffernan, Matt Healy, Kian Kelleher all scored as Connacht moved to within 2 points of Sale in Pool 3. Perpignan finished the game with 14 men following a red card for their prop, Andrea Kogaji. So that was one of the games last night. There were a couple of others, weren't there?
There were indeed. I can give you a couple of results. That was in the Champions Cup, Tom. It was Exeter defeated your beloved Gloucester, actually. 29 points to 17.
Got it, because Gloucester played so well the previous week to beat Exeter at Exeter, and it was a sort of carbon copy flip side, but wrong result.
29 points to 17, that was for Exeter Chiefs. And then Ulster were far too strong for Scarlets. Big win for Ulster. Comprehensive 30 points to 15. So that was the wins there in the Champions Cup. Wins also in the Challenge Cup last night for Stade Francais. Connick and Argen were the winners in the Challenge Cup. 7 matches today in that competition as well.
Let's talk rugby, if we can, for a moment, because we've been having all sorts of details coming through with regards to who's in charge, who's not in charge. It seems that a number of coaches are focusing on the World Cup 2019 as their last hurrah.
Well, a lot of coaches are saying they are finishing with their respective teams at the next year's World Cup in Japan. The latest one is the All Blacks coach, Steve Hansen, has come out and said he will not remain as the All Blacks coach post-Japan World Cup. He's had phenomenal success with the All Blacks. He has an 88% win ratio, which in any team sport around the world is probably almost as good as any. I would have thought there's not many teams win 9 out of every 10 games they play. So he's had a phenomenal run, been with the All Blacks firstly as an assistant coach to Graham Henry and then as the head coach, and he's come out and said he will not be coaching beyond the Rugby World Cup. The same has been said for the Kiwi who coaches Ireland, Joe Smith, who says he will finish in Ireland then. So is there something more of that story? Well, Joe Smith says, no, there's not, but Just wait and see how that develops. Joe Smith's come out and said he wants to spend time with his family post the Rugby World Cup. He's going to give everything for Ireland. And Ireland have a great chance of winning a first ever Rugby World Cup next year in Japan, as do the All Blacks. So two of the favourite teams probably going into that event, number one and number two in the world. Of course, Ireland defeated the All Blacks only a couple of weeks ago in Dublin. So that will be interesting to see how that coaching setup plays out. But Steve Hansen had this to say only in the last 24 hours when he's come public with the decision saying he will not be coaching the All Blacks post Japan Rugby World Cup.
Well, we're here to establish whether I'm staying or going, so I'm going. I think after 16 years, it's been a wonderful and a privilege time to be involved in rugby in New Zealand, but I think from a New Zealand rugby point of view, I think it's fair that I give them the time to have a process that allows them to not rush in finding a replacement, and the turbulence of trying to find a replacement straight after a World Cup, whether it's been a good one or a bad one, is not really the way to do the process. So I'm really pleased about the timing of it. It also allows me not to be distracted by you guys asking me every 5 minutes, am I staying or going? So that'll be great. We'll be able to just concentrate on what we want to do, which is try and win a World Cup.
Steve Hansen, happy as ever with his media duties there.
Yeah, he's been put under, I say pressure, but I guess it helps make the process very clear now about they're not going to make any rash decisions on back of a very good World Cup or a bad World Cup. They've got 12 months to work out who they want to be the next All Black coach. And it will be interesting to see which direction they go in. Obviously, maybe the leading contender is Ian Foster, his assistant coach who's been there for 4 years. That would guarantee continuity. But will they bring in one of the big name overseas-based New Zealanders who coach overseas? A Warren Gatland, who's been successful with Wales and the British Irish Lions. A Joe Smith, who's been successful with the likes of Ireland, also club coaching in France. Or will they look down the Super Rugby pecking order for someone like Razor Robertson in the Crusaders, who's won two Super Rugby titles, young and unproven internationally. So it's going to be really interesting for the All Blacks. It's nice. I think Hansen's made the right decision. Despite having a phenomenal record, not many coaches leave, again, a team sport with a 90% win record and then say, I've had enough, I'm going to move on and retire. It doesn't happen around the world. But he's made the decision that I think's for the best progression of the All Blacks is a new voice to come in and a refreshing look at the whole system, someone maybe outside that All Black sort of environment and do that. So I think the next coach will come as a package. I think it's the coaching team that will get the next job, if that makes sense. Who is going to come in with assistant coaches to put together a team to take the All Blacks further and forward on? But a good decision and a brave decision in many ways, again, due to the fact that when you've won as much as he had, there's probably only one place to go, which is down when you've won at 90% for 4 years. So a brave decision by him, but congratulations for him making it. And he'll go on and be successful. I'm sure he'll pick up some nice lucrative consultancy jobs around the world in the world of rugby in post-career.
Question I had for you, I was meant to ask you this last week, but we ran out of time. But there is a discussion going on. I know it's not the first time that discussion has been had. Around the Gallagher Premiership, around the top echelons of rugby up in the Northern Hemisphere, specifically rugby within the United Kingdom, England more specifically, about ring fencing the Premiership, this idea of doing away with promotion and relegation, because that's basically what ring fencing means, doesn't it? And whether the Premiership would benefit, whether England rugby would benefit from that. Two sides to this argument. Where do you sit on it?
Well, I mean, you look at what happens in the Southern Hemisphere, slightly different structures, slightly different setups. In Super Rugby, take for example, successful somewhere like New Zealand. We have five Super Rugby teams, five franchises. There's no promotion relegation, and New Zealand Rugby does okay out of that. They can control the franchises. They have a say in which players, how the domestic season works.
New Zealand Rugby does okay, but Super Rugby doesn't do okay.
Well, Super Rugby struggles for different reasons. You know, we can sort of have another show on arguing the merits and the ups and downs of Super Rugby as a competition.
Can't wait for that.
The thing about the Premiership is they're saying, you know, what makes it difficult for some of the smaller clubs is to compete with the big clubs with the big budgets, and because they're always just trying to stay up in the division. And they have to spend accordingly to do so. It doesn't sometimes encourage players to come through. They use a lot of overseas players. It doesn't encourage the youth to come through. A bit like the Premiership in some ways, but the Premiership in football has that up and down relegation play. The clubs that get relegated out of the Premiership rugby do struggle. They don't get, say, in the Premiership, the parachute payment terms. So they take on big salaries, big wages. They get these big name marquee players, and they often get relegated and they almost go bankrupt because they can't afford to live beyond their means anymore. So it's a delicate question to debate on in any sporting front. You look at the success of American sport in their big four sports, NBA, NFL, ice hockey and baseball. There's no promotion relegation. Teams don't go up and down. They know they're there every year, year in, year out. They can plan accordingly. You can budget. You can get the players. You know what your money's in. You don't have to worry about the relegation threat. So in American sport, it works fine. There's no up and down. English rugby, yeah, it's an argument that can be debated. I'm not sure whether it will change or not. But again, you can sit on either side of the fence, really, Tom, and argue a case for both.
Well, let's bring Sean into the conversation from a football point of view. Sean's played and obviously coached the game at the highest level. And promotion, relegation has always been one of those threats in whatever format you're playing in football. The suggestion being here, doing away with something that would hinder player development, because is that the case in football? Does it help develop players from the lower leagues up into the higher leagues?
It's a difficult one because there's a big thing in England now. Obviously, you know, we talk about, you know, the young English or good young English players aren't getting enough opportunities to play at the top level because they always, you know, this argument about bringing foreign players in. I don't know. I always think that, you know, if a player is good enough, they will make it. I think is what I always think. So I don't always agree with people with that kind of argument. The non-promotion, non-relegation thing, it's very alien to me, obviously, because I'm coming from a football background. I don't know, to be honest. I don't know if it hinders because I don't know enough
but do you think promotion is something that from a club's point of view, the allures of promotion from whatever league to another league, for, you know, regardless whether it's Championship into Premier League, but the idea of going up, is that how important is that to a club?
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah, that side of it's massive. Yeah, because what do you aspire to achieve if you can't
that's what
progress?
I get. Yeah. Isn't that the problem with Super Rugby at the moment? Is the fact that you know, you're getting certain teams or certain franchises that are dominating the game, which is great for a Kiwi like you, but we're getting a load of games that are just pointless.
The other thing that I don't understand, sorry, not to cut you off before you answer, is like with the Super League in England, if you finish first, sorry, end of the fixtures, you don't actually win the Super League, do you?
No.
You go into playoffs.
You go into playoffs. I mean, that's just mental
again,
to me.
That's an American sport model, as most of the sports. You spend the whole regular season playing in a league competition, and then the top so many teams then go into a playoff league to see who actually wins it.
Yeah, I think the top four or the top eight, is it going to quarter semi-final? However it works.
Different situation. So in NBA, you have 32 teams. You have 16 teams in an Eastern Conference and a Western Conference. You play both teams. Come playoffs, the top eight teams then play off within their conferences. You have a conference winner who then plays the other conference winner in the NBA Finals, best of seven. So that's similar to what they do in NFL, and they do in that's the NBA, but they also do it in Major League Baseball, and they do the same in NHL ice hockey. It's just the system of conferences, and then you play off and have playoffs.
The same argument could be made to the Championship, couldn't it? With the playoff finals at the end of the Championship season.
But there's still a definitive winner of the league. That's you know, like with the Super League, I think
playoffs for teams 3-6, isn't it? Or three, four.
So I think for me, with the Super League, if you play a series of fixtures, say it's 10, 20 games of it, and you are the best in that league and you finish first, you should be the champions. And then I understand you call it the cup competition or whatever, you know, the top eight going to a playoffs, and that's your cup, and you could be league and cup champions, you know.
Well, here's the counter argument is you have the Champions League, right? So you can win the Champions League, but you might not be champion of your own country.
You can win the Champions League. Yeah. I mean, I don't agree with that either. I think if
used to be the old European Cup, you had to win.
For me,
you had to be the winner of the Premier League, and then you played in the old 100% style.
For me,
League.
I think if you win your domestic league, you should be in the Champions League group stages. 100%. It's called the Champions League. It's the European Champions League. So if you've won a domestic league in Europe, you should be in there 100%. And then your other cup competition can be for people who finish second and onwards. But it's mad how you could finish fourth in the Premier League and win the Champions League. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Bristol, where the game is always on. We take a short break. When we come back, let's get round the ground, shall we, and find out some team news for you ahead of these 7 o'clocks.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Hokey dokey peeps, we are talking all things football here on the show at the moment. Let's get some manager reaction, shall we, ahead of our live game at 7 o'clock, which is going to see Tottenham take on Burnley in our 7 o'clock. Let's hear it from Sean Dyche. He's been struggling throughout the week with sciatica, but he does say he knows how important back-to-back wins would be.
You know, teams that have had either no wins or minimal in a long period. I think Watford are the latest. I'm not sure how many they've had, but I think they've had one maybe in 11 or 12 or something like that. You know, it's tough. So we get a win and it just gives them that reminder of, you know, that winning feeling. We do go into two tough games now, of course. They're all tough, but particularly, I think, when you go away to the likes of Tottenham and Arsenal. But that bit more freedom to go and play, I think, at them sort of places.
Team news-wise, well, he's got players coming back from fitness problems. In fact, he's looking forward to having all three of his keepers back at it again.
I'm sure we will at some point. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're all good goalkeepers. I think we've got a good group. I've mentioned it many, many times. But that's part and parcel of the job, and we want everyone fit, that's for sure, because we've been struggling with that all season, really, you know, to have a completely fit group. So we do want them fit, and then we'll take on the challenge what comes next.
Asked also during that pre-match press conference about the confidence within Burnley, he says the side is growing in confidence.
Well, there's been signs of it recently. You know, three out of the last four, I thought we were unlucky not to get something against Newcastle. We didn't perform against Palace. We did against Liverpool, but they're a good side, as we know. And then we nicked a win against Brighton, and we had to fight for everything. And, you know, the last 10 minutes especially. You know, because it gets that little bit of nervousness comes into the game. But we've got to find ways of winning. We know that anyway. We've always had to do that. And we have to continue to do that. We have to continue as a side. We have to continue with the right mentality. The physicality is stronger again. I think that's coming back to where we want to be. And the tempo of the side and the energy of the side. And so all of them things, they all make a difference. But inevitably, it's about doing the right things in both boxes. And I think that's the balance we haven't found as freely this season. But there's signs of it coming back.
Let's get Sean on Sean now on the efforts of Sean Dyche. Sean, a show with us here from our broadcast position. Very different seasons. Last season, obviously, great success and was getting the plaudits, was getting recognised by the league, etc. Different challenge this season.
It's a massive, it's a real strange one with Burnley because, like you said, they were fantastic last year and obviously qualifying for Europe was such a great achievement for them. You know, and as Russell was saying, he was online earlier. They really stretched this year. You know, the season started early because they were Europa League qualifiers and it was a big thing for the club and then they crashed out of that. But they've been unlucky. It just goes to show you, I think, how much, you know, form gives you confidence, which gets you the results, you know, and a little bit of luck that you might need. And like he was just saying there, Sean, they just haven't quite had the rub of the green and they've played some good teams. And last year, where they might have nicked a point or nicked a win, you know, they've been losing those games. And it's tough, but I think, you know, Sean Dyche is a very, very good manager and he should be very, very well respected by everyone. And I know when they were going through that bad patch, there were people saying that maybe it's time for him to move on, which is just ridiculous. I think what he's done with Burnley is fantastic. And OK, it's not been a great season, but, you know, Burnley will always be all right. They're not going to be in the bottom three come the end of the season, no way. They will, you know, get to a point where they were last year, I'm sure, and put a bit of a run together and start picking up some points.
Let's hear from the Spurs manager now, Mauricio Pochettino. He says Barcelona, always a difficult team to face. This after, of course, that remarkable comeback midweek.
The quality that Barcelona have is unbelievable. It's one of the best teams on Europe or in the world. And it's so difficult to challenge them in that way. Of course, that our philosophy, our idea is always to dominate the opponent. But for that, not only you need to work tactic or you know to have some formation or some ideas clear to play in possession, you need to the quality player that can challenge this type of team. And of course, Barcelona is a clear example that for many, many, many years they play in the same way, with the same philosophy. And of course, it's so difficult to challenge a team like Barcelona.
Let's talk about the Barcelona way there. He was also pressed on what was the Spurs way at the moment. What's the most important thing for them in order to play their format?
I am not happy with the perception when they are not
assessing the right way to us. I think after investment and after many things, when you assess a different club, normally it's Liverpool and Manchester City, Chelsea, United, Arsenal will be involved in the race for the title, but not Tottenham. But of course, we are there because we compete in a very good way, because our performers are doing fantastic. But of course, the perception is different, of course.
And what about that question that Mark Archer posed to Russell Hargreaves a little earlier on? Where are we at with the stadium at the moment? Pochettino has been asked about that as well. Has he got any more information?
I hope and I wish to play our first leg in the new stadium. Now, I don't know. Is this going to be there or not, or in Wembley? We need to wait. But my wish and hope that we can play the first leg in our new stadium.
Mark Archer, you got your ear to the ground when it comes to all things sport. What is going on with White Hart Lane?
It's one of those situations. We know we work in a very construction heavy world here in the UAE, and when you ask someone about the completion of a project and they go, oh, it's going to be in February, and then you go, which year? Because that's usually the way forward, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're never quite sure, and this situation has dragged on now for, they were supposed to be in there at the start of the season, in August, which means they would have been in there in June, July, doing testing and giving matches and getting it up to speed, and there is delays. I did see some TV coverage pictures. I'm not sure whether it was like today or this week on the stadium. It still looks as though there were cranes there. There was a lot going on. They haven't, you've got to still test it. You've got to put a lot of systems in place. You've got to have crowds in there. There's stewarding. There's all sorts of things that have to happen. And for me, you know, are they going to get in there this season? I mean, I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think what they're probably better off, you know, just saying, look, you know, almost saying we'll be in when we're in. You know, we'll let you know sort of thing. Because I think they keep putting extra pressure themselves by saying it'll be the end of the year. Okay, it's going to be by February. I don't think it's affecting the players that much. I don't think so. The fans talk about it, the media like to talk about it, but I don't think the players that bothered. If their home games are at Wembley till the end of the season, it's fine for them. It's not a problem. That's become their kind of home ground anyway. But I think to take the pressure off themselves, they could just say, look, we'll be in there for the start of next season. Because like you say, I saw the pictures of it as well on the news today, and it still looks like there's a long way to go for it before it's finished. So.
Apparently, quite recently, they opened the club shop. And they were selling shirts. So, I mean, obviously, the commercial enterprise is running. They just can't get on the football pitch.
I mean, the only thing I would say about it is that, you know, I get it. I get there are delays and things like that. But I'm sort of more likely and more inclined to expect those delays here or other parts of the world. I mean, London in 2018, just 2019, for such an iconic stadium as well, to have such massive delays, that's where I can't get my head around it.
Yeah, it is strange. Yeah. I've no idea why it's been delayed for so long, but... Hey, they'll get there eventually, won't they?
Let's get to some more team news for you, shall we? Watford host Cardiff and Bournemouth are at Wolves. Let's do some Watford for you now. Manager Javi Gracia makes one change from the side that drew 2-2 with Everton last weekend. He brings in Gerard Delafeu in the place of Isaac Success, the brilliantly named Isaac Success, who drops to the bench. Watford starting 11, Foster, Delafeu, Deeney, Sema, Cathcart, Decore, Quina, Femenia, Holibas, Cabasele and Pereira. They take on Cardiff. One change for Neil Warnock's Cardiff 2 as they look to push on from last weekend's victory at Southampton. Junior Hoylett is the man who moves into the starting lineup in place of Nathaniel Mendes-Lang, who is a substitute today. Neil Warnock, Cardiff, have they got enough quality to stay up?
At the start of the season, I'll be honest, I thought they were a shoo-in to go down. I thought they'd be rock bottom. But they've won 3 out of the last 5 games and have climbed out of the bottom 3. And have actually, you know, they've actually played relatively well and got some good results. I still fear for them that they'll end up going down. But who knows? But I think, yeah, my own opinion is, well, I hope they go down because I hope there's 3 teams below Huddersfield Town. But they've done well. They've got form, you know, and that's what we had last year in our first season in the Premier League. You know, we hit form very, very early and got points on the board, and that kept us up in the end. But we'll see.
We talked about a lot on the show earlier about the busy time of year now where games basically come sometimes 3 times a week and you have then Boxing Day matches and you have New Year's Day matches. And which of those bottom clubs, Sean, have the depth, have a bit more strength in numbers, have some more, again, injuries, suspensions, all those sorts of issues are going to come into play. Which of the clubs in those bottom sort of in the if you, I mean, there's really five or six clubs.
I think there's seven. Really,
there's seven. Cardiff, Newcastle, Palace, Burnley, Huddersfield, Southampton, Fulham, all in that battle there. Yeah. You know, seven comes into three. Which of those clubs you think it just might be strong enough come those games that have come thick and fast now?
I'd say Southampton. Southampton for me, I've got, I, for the life of me, I do not know why Southampton are down at the bottom end of the table. I think they've been a great club over the last few years. They've come a long way since they were back in the Championship. I think they recruited, you know, wrongly in bringing Mark Hughes in. But if you look at their squad on paper, and now the new manager that's come in, I think they'll be strong. I think that once he starts to implement the way that he likes to play football, they'll be okay and they'll get through it. Southampton, definitely.
Let's go to another crucial game at the bottom of the table. It is Huddersfield against Newcastle. You've been getting a bit of team news on this one because they've had to ring a few changes, haven't they, both managers?
Yeah, well, we've Newcastle, like I said, Yedlin got sent off in the last game, so he's out. Shelby's out injured. For us, we've lost Aaron Moy, which is a real big loss because he's by far our best player and does a lot for us. So for him to be out is really, really bad. And obviously he's out till the middle of February, so we're going to lose him for a lot of key games. Mounier is injured, so he's still out as well. So De Potro will probably start up front, I would imagine. So it's a big game for both clubs. You know, Newcastle have been a little bit unlucky. They lost, what, the 94th minute, I think it was, against Wolves the other day. We've been playing a lot better, but we haven't turned the performances into points. But I think at home, in the rain, in West Yorkshire, you're going to see 3 points for Huddersfield Town today.
Well, how do you sort of sum up 2018 for Huddersfield? Because obviously they got the work cut out at the moment. I go back to that question we posted a little while ago about Burnley. I mean, it's been a contrasting year for Huddersfield, yeah. The highs and the lows.
It has, yeah. Look, our first Premier League season was fantastic. So the first four or five months of the year when we were finishing off last season, yeah, was great. Like, we got good points on the board. We'd beaten United at home. You know, our last three games were City, Chelsea and Arsenal. Yeah. And no one gave us a hope, and we got 2 points out of those three matches, and end up, you know, staying up in 16th in the end. So it was great. And then I think over the summer we just didn't recruit very well. We've brought players in who are good, but it was so clear that we needed a striker, and because we've got Mounier and De Potro, who are so sort of the same player almost, you know, so we're so predictable in the way that we play. We've been found out almost, I think, this season. And, you know, like I said about Burnley, form and, you know, getting a run of form and getting points on the board is critical. And in the first six games, we played City, we played Chelsea, we played United. So we've played some really tough... Tottenham, sorry, not United. We've played some really tough teams so far, and it's punished us, and, you know, we're low on confidence.
Sean, two clubs below you, Southampton and Fulham, have both had managerial changes in the last month, a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Any thoughts of Huddersfield do slump now or do stay in that bottom three? They might be thinking about making a change, or is he safe?
No, he's safe. Look, I mean, David Wagner's worked miracles since he came to Huddersfield. The first season he came in, you know, we were favourites to get relegated from the Championship. He kept us up, and then in his first full season, he's taken us to the Premier League. So for him, look, for us, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. Of course, we want to be in the Premier League, but if we were to get relegated, it wouldn't be the end of the world. The Championship is a very, very good league. There's a lot of derbies for Huddersfield when we're in the Championship. And you know, as a Town fan going into those games, that we'd probably win half of our games in the Championship. At the minute, every week, it's like, I just hope we don't get battered. So, but going back to the question about Wagner, no, he's safe. Look, we'll do everything we can to keep hold of him. If we go down, we would love to keep him, but I think he's probably destined to go back to the Bundesliga at some point, but I would hope we'd keep him for another season.
Let's just confirm those changes for you. Team news has come in. Three changes made by Newcastle boss Rafa Benitez. Fabian Schär returns to action. Kennedy and Javier Manquillo also earn starts against Huddersfield, while Matt Ritchie drops to the bench. As to David Wagner, he's had to alter his lineup in this crucial game. 21-year-old Juninho Bakuna, Philip Billing, and Florent
Hadajanai.
That's the one.
Hey?
Start for the Terriers today. So those are the confirmed starting lineups for both those two teams. I'll give you news on the other starters at 7 o'clock in just a few minutes' time. So stay tuned for that one as we wrap things up here on The Grill.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Great comment that's just come through on the social media saying, text commentators across the land rejoice. Then it gives Florent Hadajanai, who I've just butchered several times already. And then he follows it with Control plus C, Control plus V as well. Copy and paste. It's a bit of a commentator's curse, that one. Let's go to some other team news. Let's go down to Crystal Palace, shall we? Crystal Palace against Leicester. Which way do you see this one going, Shawnee?
I think I've got to say Leicester. I think Palace, they've been poor this year, Palace. They're struggling. I think they've 4 defeats in the last 6 games. Zaha's not playing. Benteke is still out. You know, Maguire and Vardy are back for Leicester. I think even though it's at Palace, I think for me, you'd have to say a Leicester victory for me, I think.
3 changes for Palace from the side beaten by West Ham last time out. Spanish keeper Vincent Guetta makes his debut with Wayne Hennessy out. Meanwhile, other news coming through. Martin Kelly, Jordan Ayew replaced the suspended James Tompkins and Wilfred Zaha, respectively. So Palace have made a few changes. Leicester have made 4 changes from the team beaten by Spurs last week. Jamie Vardy returns, as Shawnee was saying, from a groin injury in place of Kelechi Iheanacho. Harry Maguire, Christian Fuchs come in for Johnny Evans and Ben Chilwell in defence. And Mark Albrighton replaces Vicente Iborra in midfield. So Leicester also ringing the change. Do you reckon they worked out their sort of best starting 11 as yet, Leicester? Because they like a change, don't they?
They do like, he does like a change, old Puel, doesn't he? But I think they've sort of figured it out now. I think they've been playing some decent football, Leicester. I think he knows, he has his style of play. He knows the system that he wants to play. And like I say, he's made a few changes and whatnot. But I think all the players kind of understand their roles better underneath him now. And they're doing all right, Leicester.
Well, let's go over to the rugby very quickly before we bring you more team news. Mark Archer's just monitoring the games that are taking place around Europe.
5 fixtures in the European Champions Cup today. 2 early kickoffs. 1 game has just blown for full time down in Cardiff, where the Blues are taking on Saracens. Saracens have won this match 26 points to 14. Tries to the Scottish international Sean Maitland and the English international Jamie George. Owen Farrell has converted both those tries and also kicked 4 penalties for Saracens. So Saracens 26, Cardiff Blues 14. That's a full time. And 10 minutes to go in Glasgow, where the Warriors are taking on the French team Lyon, and they lead 21 points to 10. Couple of early kickoffs in the Challenge Cup. At the Stoop, Quins lead Benetton Treviso at the start of the second half, 17 points to 9. And full time in France, where Clermont Auvergne have defeated Newport Gwent Dragons 49 points to 24.
This time last week, we were reflecting on the Cape Town Sevens. The Sevens roadshow had heading down to South Africa after the successful Dubai event as well. It's the sport that keeps on giving, isn't it? And yet another, not a shock result, but one we didn't really see following on from the form book in Dubai.
Well, it's Fiji with the success in the men's, and I think they knocked over USA in the final. But USA made 2 finals back-to-back. Great to see their progress. They've almost ratcheted up a gear now. Final in Dubai, where they lost to the New Zealand All Blacks team, and then final in Cape Town, where they lost to the Fijians. So good to see Fiji. I mean, Fiji are the spiritual side of Sevens rugby. It's what, and an Olympic champion, so they have some fair pedigree there. And good to see them have the win. But yeah, South Africa upset at home in that in their home competition, which made it interesting for them. So yeah, good to see a lot of teams contending. And that's the nice thing about Sevens. Any given week, one of those big sort of teams can come through in the men's pool and shock the rest. So I think we've now got quite a big break till February. And I think it starts again, I think, in New Zealand, then it goes to Australia. I think that's the next 2.
That's the question I was going to ask about. What do Sevens players do during that? Because there is a big gap, isn't there, between a number of the series. I mean, most of them are with professional clubs, are they?
Yeah, but again, the Northern Hemisphere clubs, you look at the Sevens, you know, who's done well now. So you've got Australia, New Zealand, Fiji, South Africa. Well, there's no domestic rugby on the Southern Hemisphere. I guess the Northern Hemisphere guys, a lot of them are specialists. I don't think many of those English Sevens players go back and play 15s, maybe in a slightly lower division, but they can't have full-time professional contracts. France and the Portugals and the Spains, I think they're basically specialised Sevens players. So they're on sort of part-time contracts. I don't think they're fully professional, but then they might have to go and do some teaching or some engineering or something else to keep them busy, bartending to keep them out of trouble. But you're right, Tom. I think the competition resumes, HSBC Series, Men's Series, resumes in February. I think they go to Hamilton in New Zealand, and they go to the Gold Coast, I believe, in Australia.
Wolves against Bournemouth is another of the 7 o'clock kickoffs. That one, if there are any goals in it, you'll hear him first right here on Dubai Eye 103.8. Let's get Sean's thoughts ahead of this one.
I'd be going for Wolves in this game. I think I've been very impressed with Wolves. When they came up, they played a great brand of football in the Championship last year and came up to the Premier League. I was confident that that they would do well, and they have done. I think if they win today, they can actually leapfrog Man United and move into seventh in the league if they win today.
Wolves have made four changes to the team that beat Newcastle 2-1 last time out. Raul Jimenez, Joao Moutinho, Morgan Gibbs-White and Johnny Castro-Otto as Romain Saiss, Helder Costa, Adam Traore and Ruben Vinagre all drop out of that starting 11. So the Premier League is ringing the changes today. I suppose that's evidence of the amount of football that's been played at this time of year. We're into a busy schedule.
Yeah, exactly. I think that a lot of games have been played, and then obviously coming up now, you through the Christmas period and New Year period, you're playing games sometimes within 48 hours of the next one. So you have to do it, you have to rotate, and that's why you need, you know, the depth in your squad to be able to do that. And obviously managers are seeing that now and resting players where they can and picking the fixtures where they can rest those players and obviously get the stronger players back in for the bigger games.
Bournemouth made two changes to the team that lost 4-0 last time out at Liverpool last weekend. Against Liverpool last weekend, Simon Francis replaced by Tyrone Mings at fullback, and Jordan Ibe comes in for the midfielder. David Brooks, top scorer Callum Wilson, returns from a hamstring injury but only makes the bench. They need him back at the moment, don't they?
They do, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think Bournemouth were they were taken to pieces by Liverpool last week, weren't they? Absolutely taken to pieces by them. And look, Liverpool are in fantastic form, so you can't be too critical of Bournemouth. But they've done all right, Bournemouth this year. I think they've surprised a few people. They've been impressive, but they need to bounce back after that game last week, because it was miserable for them. Absolutely miserable.
Right, we've got Tottenham against Burnley coming live for you in just a few moments' time. Prediction time for you, Mr. Sean O'Shea.
I am going to go with a 3-0 Tottenham victory. Harry Kane will get at least two, I think.
He's going to be on the score sheet,
yeah,
is he?
Yeah.
Shawnee, lovely to see you, mate. Thanks so much indeed
for
being
great
in touch.
Thank you very much, guys. Yeah,
I think we should do all this again around about this next week. We'll have a Christmas party as well.
Yeah,
all right?
I'll definitely be back for that.
Yeah, apparently Mrs. Artois will arrive and help us out.
Well, I'm sure.
Flying in from Belgium, is she?
She's very helpful. She's very helpful.
She's done a great job redecorating here at the rooftop garden, Mrs. Artois, so we look forward to her joining us for some merrymaking next Saturday.
A festive party would be nice, wouldn't it?
Good stuff. Good on you, Shawnee. And thanks, Archie, as well, for being on board.
Thank you, Tom, and I'll see you next week.
Done. Deal. Stay tuned. You've got Dubai Eye 103.8 on your radio at the moment. You've got Premier League action, live Premier League action, coming away in just a few moments' time. It is Spurs against Burnley first up, and then straight after that, Fulham against West Ham. Enjoy.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.